This is our number 10.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Going into a holiday weekend, I'm going to see if I can catch some king salmon and halibut going up Sunday to Sitka for the second time ever. It's so weird. Everybody's so shocked that I, grew up in Ballard, grew up in the most Scandahoovian of communities as a half Scandahoovian myself. And I never went fishing. Never. But you know what? When you don't have a dad, I think that's when you tend to not take to stuff like that. What I was talking about last hour, about the breakdown of the family. I'm so blessed because I do recognize that having an intact family is so important in our community and in our society and in the lives of kids. And I didn't have a dad, but things worked out. Just have had an incredibly blessed life. But when you don't have a dad, you tend not to have anybody who teaches you how to do stuff like go fishing. So I never went fishing until 3 years ago. First time I ever caught a fish in my life was 3 years ago up in Sitka with Brock and Tom Nelson. So we're going to go back up there on Sunday. See what I can do. See what I can do catching those fish. But more than anything, I'm going to have Tom Nelson jump on with me about an hour from now. Because fishing itself, I told Brock this. I said, I can take or leave the fishing. But I love those two men. We just have an incredible time, incredible camaraderie. And I have found that bobbing on an ocean with mountain peaks rising right next to you and whales jumping out of the water and eagles flying overhead, that it does rejuvenate the soul. And I need that. And I think that more people need that because, and I think our kids need that. With all the time they're spending just looking at a screen and, as I said, for 2 years being isolated and falling deeper and deeper into a spiral of anxiety and depression and just living their life in a way. Until a year ago, we had 2-year-olds who had never seen a human face outside of their home. What does that do? What does that do to a developing baby? You never see a human face. You don't know what a mouth looks like on another human being outside of your home. You don't know what a smile means or a little wry twisting of the lips. You never experience that outside of your home from your own parents and siblings. We took that away from kids. And I think more than ever, for me personally, more than ever before, I need to have a little bit of my soul rejuvenated. And I can think of no better way to do that than to be completely unplugged and to be with nature. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to come back next week all freshened up for you. And then I'll tell you something else. I'm going to talk to somebody at 1:30 this afternoon. He's a local man, lives on the east side. He's 81 years old. And I saw Channel 4, Eric Johnson, I think their news anchor does a fine job. He has a feature called Eric's Heroes. And I saw him profile this man. And I am telling you, other than the fact that he and I are a couple decades apart in age, everything I heard about this guy, that's me. Played basketball he played into his 60s. I had to stop when I was 58, and I miss the game so much. I miss competition. My whole life has been built around competing professionally, coaching, everything. Just playing ball, playing all the sports that I played. Then my knee wore out. So anyway, Eric Johnson did a feature on this guy. And I thought, this is really cool.
He'll be 82 in 3 months, old enough to know better, as they say, but not too old to dream, not too old to set his mind to something, something immense, and then see it through. His name is Tom Story, and when he says he's going to do something, he does it, even if it takes him 17 years. He and basketball have had a lifelong friendship. Back in 2004, when he was 65, his magnificent obsession began.
One day, leaving my workout, I walked past the open gym door, and there's a basketball laying in there about the free throw line. So, I'll go in and I'll shoot 100 free throws.
He made 82 shots out of the 100 that day. He wrote it down on his calendar at home. And the next day, he did it again. And the next, and the next.
Well, then, 100 became 200.
Over time, 200 became 400. Soon, it wasn't something he did after his workout. It was his workout. And he did it almost every day.
Okay, so, yeah, you can see the whole story. It's up on their website, comonews.com. It's a really great story. I'm going to have that man, Tom Story, he's going to join me right after the news at the bottom of the hour here, because he said things about competition, about pushing yourself, that I want to hold on to when I'm his age, when I'm 81 years old. I want that to always be a part of my life. And I want to know if a singular pursuit could ever replace the thrill of competing with a group of people, with a team. So I'm going to talk to him about all that stuff. And I'm really looking forward to it. Plus, he told a story in the Channel 4 piece about finding a mentor at his age. Maybe I need a maybe I can make him my mentor. So I'm looking forward to that. I hope you'll enjoy the conversation too. So I'll talk with East Side's Tom Story at right after 1:30 this afternoon. All right, let's get into the fastest 15 here. Gas prices just killing people. Expected to hit an all-time, they've hit record highs for 17 consecutive days. Joe Biden has dropped the "it's Putin's fault" accusation because nobody bought it. This is all on Joe Biden. He enjoys it. He's glad. Or at least the people who tell him what to say, they're glad. And so Joe just repeats whatever his handlers tell him. I told you yesterday, Joe Biden, he sounded giddy about these gas prices that are hurting Americans so horribly.
And when it comes to the gas prices, we're going through an incredible transition that is taking place that, God willing, when it's over, will be stronger and the world will be stronger and less reliant on fossil fuels when this is over.
Yeah, it's an incredible transition. So they're just revealing now what we've known from the get-go. This is all manufactured. This has all been engineered to happen exactly the way that it is. He cuts off American oil production. We're now reliant on foreign countries. We weren't when Trump was president. We were energy independent, and now we're not. And so we have to go on bended knee to OPEC and say, please increase production, please. And we're not ready to go all electric in 7 years. We will. We'll go all electric in my lifetime, Lord willing, that I live another 20, 30 years. We'll go all electric. The free market inevitably is going to take us in that direction. But to have government, the hand of government, holding the rudder of the free market and taking us where common sense just would otherwise not let us go, this is insanity. Because inflation is killing people. You've got a friend of mine texts me, just booked a trip to Dallas, airfare to Dallas, over $1,000. He made the trip for $500 6 months ago. Now it's $1,000. And we're going to see this go up even higher. Diesel, which powers the trucks that get all goods to marketplace, diesel's through the roof. We're just going to see tremendous inflation. And with that, we're going to see higher death tolls around the world. And I mean this literally. Because in as bad as it is in the United States, when worldwide recession or depression hits, for third world countries, you're going to see children dying. You see parents who aren't able to feed their kids. Just remember that the reviled, hated, demonic oil industry has been the backbone of our economy for the last 100 years. And it is capitalism in the United States and our economy that has lifted more people worldwide out of poverty than anything else in human history. American capitalism, fueled by oil, has lifted more people out of poverty than any time in human or any other force in human history. So, when you have these wild-eyed zealots whispering in the earpiece to tell Joe Biden what he should say, you have to understand, they hate oil. They hate capitalism. Because all of that represents freedom. And we have a bunch of people in control of our government, and I'm talking locally and nationally, who hate our freedom. They want to be in control of us. They really do. And so if that means that we take relative prosperity worldwide and plunge the planet into economic depression, and if it means that babies die in Africa and India, well, at least we'll be on our way to having more government control over everybody's lives. It's really an evil agenda. I'm going to keep reminding everybody of it because we got to fight evil. We got to stand up against evil. And up next in the Fastest 15, then there's this. Joe Biden's administration has just tipped its hat on what they're going to do for college loan forgiveness. It looks like college loan recipients will get $10,000 taken off the top of their debt if they earn under $150,000 a year. For a married couple, if you earn under $300,000 a year, you get $20,000 lopped off your college debt, which means that you and I get to pay somebody else's college debt. Now, why is the number $150,000 a year? Because you would think if somebody makes $149,000 that they might not need to go on the college loan welfare dole. How'd they come up with $150,000 a year? Well, it's interesting. The annual salary for members of Congress is $174,000 a year. Now, they get a standard deduction. They also can make some 401k deductions. And lo and behold, members of the squad who have college loans, they might just be able to get their income down to $149,000 a year. That's perfect. So Congress, which regularly sees people become DECA millionaires off their insider trading knowledge, just follow the Pelosi's. They are apparently on their way to engineering college loan forgiveness. They'll work just perfectly for their income bracket. Isn't that amazing? And then the question persists, as it always does in my mind, what about me? I paid my own college by working 60 hours awake while going to college full time. I couldn't join a frat. I did for one day. I didn't go to parties. I didn't have a social life. I went to school full time and I worked 60 hours a week so I could pay my own bills. They're going to give me $20,000 back? No. Uh-uh. What about my kids? My wife and I, we started putting, I think it was about $400 a month when they were born. We couldn't afford $400. We didn't have $400 extra dollars a month when our girls were born. But we did it. So we joined the GET program so we could pay their tuition. Are we going to get that money back? No, won't happen. No, but if you're a member of Congress and you partied in college and you have student loan debt, you and I get to pay their debt off now. What a racket. An absolute racket. How long are we going to put up with this? All right, there you have it. That is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
Give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Okay, 16 years ago, a local man at age 66 picked up a basketball, the passion of his life, and started shooting free throws. Wait until you hear how many he has shot, how many of them he makes. And I'm gonna talk with, I think, a soulmate. That's coming up right if we check the news here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, as I've told you many times, after a lifetime of playing basketball a couple days a week, finally, 2 years ago, my right knee said enough, and I had to replace it. And with that, the one activity that they said I really couldn't do was keep playing basketball. Too many lateral cuts and too many torques on an artificial knee. Then I saw a piece that Eric Johnson did at Channel 4 that gave me some new hope for trying to keep this itch scratched. Tom Sturry is a local man, and he's got quite a story to share, and he joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Tom, it's a pleasure to talk to you, sir.
You bet, Dory. I'm glad to be here.
You were a pretty good high school basketball player back in Hoosier Country, I hear.
Yeah, I grew up in the state of Indiana, and I was in a small school, but we had a great time, and we were pretty successful in my senior year.
Okay. And then you just kept playing, because a lot of people quit after high school and college, but like me, you just kept on playing?
I kept on playing, Dory. I went, after I graduated from high school, I went to Purdue, and I got into the intramural deal there. I was in a fraternity, and we had some great competition, interfraternity competition with all kind of sports, but my main thing was basketball, so I continued playing that with college after graduation, came out to Seattle and continued to play pickup for many years.
Yeah, and I was one of those guys. It sounds like you're probably the same. When I was in my 20s and 30s, Tom, I knew every pickup game at every rec center all around. You know, West Seattle one night, Rainier Beach the next, Green Lake the next. I had about, you know, 3-4 friends, and we would just go wherever the games were. You the same?
Well, you sound a little more dedicated than I was, Dory. After I left college and came out here, I probably, maybe there were just a couple places that I played, but we really got into a routine with the same group of guys for, I don't know, 20, 25 years, always on a Monday night at a grade school gym over here on the east side. So that was kind of my hangout with those people.
Yeah, I had that too. I had basically the same group of guys for more than 30 years. We played every Thursday night in a gym that I rented for 37 years. Okay, so now we get a little older, Tom. I was planning on playing into my 60s. I thought with that group of guys, we were all getting older together. We were all slowing down together. We were all jumping less high together, and I thought I was going to make it. Then the knee happened. You kept playing well into your 60s, it looks like.
I did, Dory. I played till I was 65, and at that time I retired, and I was always the guy that got the reserved the gym, the grade school gym, for the next year. So I turned that over to a buddy of mine, and he kind of dropped the ball. He didn't reserve the gym, so when I came back from a 3-month trip, we were gymless. So I decided, well, I'll have to do something a little different than play pickup every Monday night.
Okay, Matt, we do have a lot of similarities here. This is really funny because I was the guy who reserved the gym too. Okay, so were you heartbroken when you had to give up the game? Because I really was. I still miss it desperately.
I honestly can't say I was heartbroken. I definitely missed it, but I had taken up golf many years before that, and I was never very good at golf, but I kind of moved that into my recreational schedule, and I then continued to work out at the gym where I live over here on the east side, and I picked up a basketball one day and did a little shooting, and that kind of got me back into it.
Okay, and I mean, did it ever? So that first day, you shot about 100 free throws.
Yeah, I was leaving the I was off the treadmill, leaving the gym, walking out the front door of the Redmond Athletic Club, the rack they called it back then.
Yep.
The gym door was open. I walked in, picked up a basketball, and I said, I'll shoot 100 free throws. So that was my first encounter with the free throw line at that time.
Do you remember how many you made out of those 100?
My memory says it was either 80 or 82, Doran. Okay. One of those two numbers. I know that.
Okay. That's pretty darn good. So then the next day you went and shot 100 more.
Next day I went and shot 100 more, or at least the next day that I went to the club. So my idea was, okay, after I shoot 100, I'll come home, put them on my calendar, and then that way I'll know how often I work out. So whenever the next day was, I was back at the rack, I shot another 100. And I did that for the first month. That's probably what I shot, about 100 a day whenever I was shooting.
And then tell me what it grew into from there.
Well, at the end of the first year, or each month in that first year, I think I shot about 1,000 a month. And then near the end of the year, I noticed in my Excel spreadsheet that it had grown to maybe 2,000 to 3,000 the last couple months. And let's just say it's grown from there. So right now, I am shooting, this month of May this year to date, I've shot about 7,000, something like that.
Oh,
and
goodness.
So I'm in that range now per month.
Okay. And and tell my listeners, how old a fella are you today?
Today, my memory says I'm 81.
Okay. Here's what I think is so cool. You talked to Eric Johnson about, you tracked down the guy who's considered the greatest free throw shooter of all time. Tell me about that.
Well, after I was shooting for a few years, I started to make a couple hundred in a row or something like that. And I thought, I wonder what the world record for consecutive makes is. So I Googled it, came up with the name of Ted St. Martin. And he'd written a book, How to Shoot a Basketball. I went to Amazon, got the book, read it, and learned that he lived in Jacksonville, Florida. And my wife and I were planning a trip through there due to a family situation a couple months in the future from that time. And that was in 2010. And I made a phone call from home here before we made the trip. And I actually found his number in the White Pages. That's back when we had White Pages yet.
Yep.
And his wife answered. I told her a little bit why I was calling. She said, call him back. He definitely wants to talk to you. So I did. And I told him I'd like to come by there. We're passing through your city. I have your book. I want to buy you a cup of coffee. And I'll ask you to sign your book for me. He said, well, you're coming right by my house. Stop in here. So that's what we did. And we had an appointment with Ted and his wife, Barbara. And we spent probably 45 minutes to an hour with him, my wife and I, Ruth Ann, and with him and his wife in their home.
And we should tell people that Ted St. Martin, he has the record for consecutive made free throws, 5,221. That is just mind-boggling.
That's an awesome number, Dory. I can't even imagine. And Ted said it took him 7 hours and 20 minutes to do that without a miss. 7 hours and 20 minutes without a miss. Unbelievable. So he's my hero.
What's the most you've made in a row?
222. So I'm only 5,000 short.
That's pretty darn good. I'm having too much fun. Tom, I wasn't planning on taking your time for a whole half hour, but hold on. I want to continue this conversation. I'm talking with Tom Story, guy who lives on the east side here. He's 81 years old. He started shooting a million free throws when he was 66. He's going to complete it in August. And we'll continue the conversation in just a moment as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. All right, we are back. My guest is Tom Story. He's 81 years old, and he's figured out a way to keep doing what I would love to keep doing, and that's be fired up about playing basketball still. He's on his way to shooting a million free throws. So when you go out there now, Tom, what's your free throw percent? When I was playing, because I would always keep track of my free throws when I was playing in leagues, I was always about an 83, 84% free throw shooter. What are you knocking them down at now?
84, 83 is pretty good. Right now, actually, since the first of this year, again, I'm looking at my spreadsheet, I am at about 95%.
95%? That's incredible. Yeah.
That's what it says here. The most, I do maybe 400 or 500 in a session.
Yeah.
And I think one time, the 400, I think I made 98%, but about 95 is where I put myself right now.
Do you ever go out to shoot your 100 or 200 or 400 free throws and miss the first one and say, okay, that was my practice shot, I'm going to start now? You ever play
I don't
that
do that, Dory. That's
no,
cheating.
No, good for you.
No, that's cheating. What I do, I walk in the gym, I shoot a layup, a couple layups, I get 5 feet in front of the hoop, I shoot a couple of them, then I go behind the free throw, but far enough is, quote, not a free throw, and I shoot a couple there, and I say, okay, I'm warmed up, then I go to the free throw line, and I have to count the first one.
Okay. Good for you. You said something interesting on the Channel 4 piece that I saw. Because what I miss the most, Tom, is the competition. And I've not been able to replace that. And I dabble around at golf, but that's not the same. It's not the same thing. And you talked a little bit about competition. Tell me and my listeners what you said about it.
As I recall the interview with Eric, I think I basically was saying that the person I compete with now is me. And I, of course, in high school and then in college and those intramurals, I was more competitive back then as far as really, you know, really wanting to help the team win the game. But now in my competition is Tom Story. So each day I go over, whenever I go to the gym, I think I can do just as good as I did the day before or a little bit better. And sometimes if I don't do that well, I mean, I'll shoot. I think a while ago I did like maybe 91% for the day, and I didn't feel good. That didn't sit too well with me because I said, I can do better than that. Come on, you got to shape up here. So I guess I'm still kind of competitive, but I'm not as stringent at that as I used to be as a younger person.
And you are just 3 months away from shooting your 1,000,000th free throw since you started this pursuit at age 66?
That is correct. As I was approaching this number, I was talking to some family members about it, and I was thinking ahead, well, when am I going to do this? And I know we have a trip going on here in a month for a couple weeks, and that's going to affect my shooting a bit. And so there's a couple people from out of town, relatives, they want to come up. They want to fly up and watch this happen, all that. So actually my stepdaughter said, well, Tom, you have to pick a date. So I thought about it a little bit, and the date that came up was August 18 because that will be my 82nd birthday. So
nice.
That is my goal now, to shoot on that day my 1,000,000th shot.
And so your percentage that you're tracking, you said – you're about 95% right now, but you weren't at the very beginning. So overall, what are you?
Overall, I love numbers, Dory. So overall, I am Now, this is probably halfway through the month of May. I could have pulled my computer up, but this won't change much. 92.5249%.
Wow.
So 92.5%. Since I started, my first month was 80.
So you will have made, out of 1 million attempts, you will have made about 925,000, a little more than that, free throws. That's pretty impressive, Tom.
Yeah, that's the right number, I believe.
My goodness. Well, you know what? When I heard your story, I've got a full-size half-court basketball court at my home here. And just as you did with the all-time greatest when you went down to Florida, Ted St. Martin, would you be my mentor if I went out and tried to knock down 100 free throws? Could I get you out here someday and we'll shoot together?
I'd love it. I'd love it, Nori. Yeah.
I really would, too.
Now, you said your court is outside, right?
Yeah, we got the wind factor there.
We got to pick a not too windy day and all that, don't we?
I'll watch the forecast.
Yeah, well, you know, listen, during COVID days, when the gym was shut down, I have a friend that actually started me on this idea, but he has an outdoor court, and I shot there for like 4 months, and it definitely affected my percentage. It would be a little rainy and a little windy, and so that was more of a challenge. But, yeah, I'd love to do that.
Okay, we're going to plan on that. I'm going to hang on to your number. We'll get you out here, or I'll meet you at some indoor court if that's better. But I want to see if you can get me up to 90%.
Okay. You know, let me tell you, have time for a quick Ted Martin story?
Yeah, sure.
He when we visited him, he had an outdoor court in Jacksonville, and he would train kids there. And he had a deal, he said, where he would bring in high school kids who played ball, and he trained them, and he charged $100 an hour. And shooting free throws was the main deal. And he said, if you can't make 90% at the end of our time, you don't pay me. I don't charge you anything. I can get you to 90%.
Wow.
So I don't profess to be that good at training here. But that was a neat story I thought that Ted had.
That's cool. Well, I coached high school basketball for many years, and as a team, we always did pretty well with free throws.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Okay, well, I'm really going to follow through with this if you don't mind, Tom, and we'll get you out here. We'll shoot around, and maybe you can help rekindle what I have felt missing ever since I stopped playing with my buddies.
Okay, the competition, right?
Yeah, but you're too good. I'm not putting any money on it with you. I can tell you that right now.
Well, you know, we'll see how that goes. But, you know, I'm getting older every day, but you're probably not.
I'm at warp speed getting older right now, Tom. Okay, it's really nice talking with you, and we'll stay in touch, okay?
All right, Dory, thank you very much.
My pleasure. All right, Tom Sturry, a local man who's about to a journey he started at age 66, and on his 82nd birthday coming up in August, he will have shot his 1 millionth free throw. I love stuff like this. All right, love to hear your thoughts. You can text me, 888-973-CAIRO, 888-973-5476. We'll check the news, and then the big lead at 2, next here on the Dory Monson Show.